Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D. L. White. Chapter 13. Drying Out. "What do you think you're up to?" the caretaker said, looking Nick up and down with a sneer. "This is a pond, not a swimming pool." "I'm late for art," Nick managed through his chattering teeth. "You're not going anywhere in that state." The caretaker looked at his laptop on the bench. "And it is against the rules to have communication devices anywhere in Twitchell's." Nick was shivering more now and couldn't think of any excuses. He hugged his gown to his chest tighter. A trickle of water dripped out onto his soaked right foot. When the caretaker spoke again, her voice was softer, with almost a hint of kindness in it. "I don't suppose you jumped in with all your clothes on deliberately, unless it was some kind of dare for TikTok." She turned around slowly, casting her hard gaze through 360 degrees before settling back on Nick. "But I can't see anyone filming you on their phones." "My phone," Nick blurted. Without thinking about the rules, he clumsily fished around in his jacket pocket and found his phone. The printed map of the school was plastered to it like paper mache. When he peeled that off, the screen was dark, and stayed dark when he tried to wake it up. "There's no phones allowed," the caretaker started to say. Then she saw the look of dismay on Nick's face. "Well, there's no rule that says you can't have one in your pocket, as long as it's turned off. But you can't stand around here like that, waving it around." Nick couldn't believe he was getting told off for standing near the pond. He squeezed the paper map into a loose ball and would have thrown it at the caretaker if he'd had the energy. "Getting cold, I mean," the caretaker went on. "Laundry's nearby. It's warm in there. Plus, they've probably got something dry for you to change into." She picked up his laptop and bag and led the way around the other side of the C block accommodation building, where they crossed a small car park to a gate set deep into a tall hedge. Nick trudged along, leaving a dark, damp trail behind him on the tarmac. The caretaker opened the gate to give them access to a single-story brick building that, as far as Nick remembered, had not been marked on his now useless map. They entered the building through a set of double doors that took them straight into a big laundrette. A wall of washing and drying machines greeted them with the loud hum of their spinning drums. The air was warm and thick with the smell of detergent. "Andy," the caretaker called out, "you around?" She put Nick's bag on the floor and his laptop on an ironing board that was out against one wall. Then she wandered over to a row of washing machines, tugging the doors until she found one that opened. "Stick your gown in here." Nick did as he was told. A door at the end of the row of machines opened, and a big bearded man, presumably Andy, ambled through it. "Hey, Barb," he said. Then he saw Nick. "What happened to you?" "Pond," Nick said. "Fancied a dip, did you?" Nick shook his head. "Well, best stop dripping on my floor. Let's get that uniform cleaned up. I'll get you a fresh one. What's your name?" "Nick Thompson." "I'll look you up and get you the right sizes from the system. Just take your clothes off and stick them in the machine." Andy and the caretaker both looked at him and waited. "Oh, yeah," Andy said. "Hang on." He disappeared through a door and came back a moment later with a Twitchell's branded dressing gown. Basically an extra-large regular gown with arms and a belt. "You can wear this for the time being. And don't forget to empty your pockets. I spend enough time cleaning the filter as it is." He turned to the caretaker. "Good thing you came by, Barb. I've been having a bit of trouble with the Wi-Fi signal in the office. If you wouldn't mind taking a look." "Want me to see if I can get this working?" the caretaker said to Nick, holding out his phone. "It's no good to me anymore," Nick said sulkily. Then he caught himself. "Thanks." The two adults left Nick alone, and he didn't waste any time struggling out of his cold, wet clothes. The dressing gown was warm and soft, and as he tied the belt into a loose knot, he couldn't help but think about Andy mentioning Wi-Fi. Using the ironing board as a stand-up desk, He opened his laptop and waited nervously for it to wake up. To his relief, it blinked into life without a hitch. Moments later, he was scanning for networks, but just like in the school buildings, he found nothing. Maybe Andy just made up the Wi-Fi as an excuse to give him some privacy. Andy and the caretaker came back in, and Nick closed the lid of the laptop. "Just checking it still works," he said quickly. "Nice bit of gear," Andy said, putting a pile of Twitchell's uniform on the end of the ironing board and pointing at the laptop. "I'm a bit of a gamer myself, but I haven't got anything as fast as that. Is that the 8 or 16 core CPU? 24, Nick said. Now that he'd warmed up enough that his teeth were only lightly chattering, he noticed that, although bearded, Andy probably wasn't much older than some of the sixth formers he'd seen wandering around. "Whoa!" Andy sounded impressed. "Your phone isn't as lucky," the caretaker said. "It's totally soaked. No way to turn it on right now without shorting the battery, or worse." "Come on, Barb," Andy said. "You can fix anything. Remember that old Casio watch that went through the hot wash?" The caretaker gave Andy a withering look, but the big man didn't seem to mind. "Go on, work your magic." "I'll dry it out, then take a quick look later," the caretaker said. "But don't hold out hope. The SIM card will be fine, though. They always survive." "I assume the data was backed up?" "Yeah," Nick said. There wasn't much on his phone that mattered. The main problem would be calling home. "Well then, I'll leave you here to get dressed. I've wasted enough of my time already." The caretaker's voice was back to its normal, angry self. She hurried out of the laundry. "Bye, Barb," Andy waved at the closing doors. "Always so happy. That's what I like about Barb," he said with a wink. "I'll leave you to get dressed. You'll get your pawn stuff back in a day or two." "Thanks," Nick said. "No problem. Plus, thanks to you bringing me the gift of Barb, my Wi-Fi's working again. I owe you one." Half an hour late, but now back on the way to the art studio, Nick was going back and forth over whether to tell the teacher the real reason he was late. But as much as he'd like to get Collier and Hector into trouble for getting him wet and bricking his phone, it would probably be more trouble than it was worth. First, he'd have to get the teacher to believe him. Then, he'd have to hope that the school would actually hand out a meaningful punishment. In his experience, bad kids always manage to talk their way out of this sort of situation. He'd have to work out another way of getting revenge. The studio was a glass-walled, high-roofed building in its own little clearing just on the edge of the woods. Inside, it was a single space, with workbenches laid out in a haphazard way. Best of all, it was nice and warm. Thankfully, the teacher, Mr. Smith, accepted his story about being late due to a meeting with the inspector, and he didn't think the teacher noticed that his teeth were still chattering either. When Nick looked around for somewhere to sit, he couldn't help but notice Collier giving a silent high five to Hector. Luckily, Jenny was near the front, and she waved Nick over. She was on a workbench with a couple of other sporty girls, and Nick took a free stool at the end. He wanted to tell Jenny about what had happened, but there was no way of talking without the others hearing. The lesson took the rest of the afternoon, and involved sketching some still-life objects that were placed in the middle of each bench. Nick was pretty awful at art at the best of times, mainly because he didn't spend much time with a pen in his hand if he could help it. But his post-swim shivering attempt at drawing was truly woeful. By the end of the lesson, he had filled one corner of a sketchbook page with a wobbly green bottle, a fuzzy-edged orange, and a really terrible scrawl of an old typewriter. The typewriter looked more like a hedgehog, and he couldn't even blame the shivering, as he had warmed up by the time he drew it. He would have torn the page out and thrown it away if Mr. Smith hadn't come and collected the books at the end. To his relief, he wasn't given any extra prep to do. On the way back to the college, he was glad to be walking with Jenny. He wouldn't have put it past the man boy to try and throw him into the pond again. But there was no way that was going to happen with Jenny around. Once they were clear of the C-block dorms, he filled Jenny in with what had happened. She was angry, but agreed with Nick that they'd have to work out a way of getting Collier back that wouldn't result in them being kicked out of Twitchell's. They met up with James and Elf for tea in the house common room, and Nick retold the story of getting thrown into the pond. He also mentioned his phone and that he wanted to stay for the start of Wi-Fi time to see if the caretaker had managed to fix it. For the previous 2 days, James, Jenny and Elf had waited for Nick to finish prep, then they had dinner all together at Twitchell's before conjuring a portal back to Brighton. Nick would have happily skipped prep, but Jenny pointed out that falling even further behind was a surefire way of getting expelled. As it was Friday, Elf wanted to get the weekend started as early as possible, so James agreed to take the others back to Brighton, then come back and fetch Nick later, after he'd seen the caretaker. Nick grabbed a triangle-cut sandwich and ate it on the way to the English room. After English was French and Latin. Even with all the extra prep time, Nick figured it would take him at least a decade to catch up with French, and more like a century even to grasp the basics of Latin. James was nowhere to be seen in the dining hall when Nick sat down with a plate of new potatoes covered in some kind of Moroccan stew. His right hand ached from copying out words he didn't understand, but he didn't let that stop him from digging into the food. He had almost finished when James came in, a little flustered. "Turns out it's much harder to find an ID badge hidden in a tree once it gets dark," James said, picking up a plate and taking it to the counters. He came back with it piled high with chips on top of a huge piece of battered cod. "Why'd you hide your badge in the trees?" Nick asked. "And where's Cece?" "Elf and Cece wanted to go out for a walk," James said. "So I hid my badge in the forest before we went back to Brighton. I put it in a really obviously crooked tree. Next time I'll put it somewhere even more obvious." "I think we need to make Faraday bags," Nick said, "to block whatever radio signal the badges use. I'm sick of Collier knowing where I am, and it will make travelling to Brighton easier." "I like that idea," James said. "We might just be able to buy some wallets, ones designed to stop contactless thieves. You can get them pretty cheap, I think. Are you getting anywhere with finding if the historic location data is stored?" That was one of the things that Nick had been working on in the evenings at Elf's house. "I can't find anything on Twitchell's network," Nick said. "I really think they just use the real-time data for the doors, and it could take a while to get anywhere with the server that collects the data in the first place." "The one outside Twitchell's network?" James asked through a mouthful of chips. "Yeah, it's a commercial service with proper security. I'm trying to find a vulnerability to exploit, but it's a slow process." "My priority right now is getting the book back," James said, pausing to finish a mouthful of fish, and to breathe. "The only lead we've got is your screenshot showing that Collier was in Brighton. I know Jenny said that we need to see the historic data to be sure, but I wish we could go after him now." He sighed. "Blocking the badges might help us in the future, but it won't get the book back. We need a different angle." Nick mulled over the problem while he ate his dessert. Something about the idea of blocking the badges kept circulating in his head. Just before 8, he left James in the dining hall and headed to the house common room. They'd agreed to meet back in their dorm room and conjure the portal to Brighton from there. The common room in the house was busy with kids waiting for their hour of internet. As soon as the caretaker had set up the Wi-Fi, she came straight over to Nick, who was relaxing in his usual armchair. "Working fine," she said, handing his phone to him. "Really?" Nick was amazed. "Wow, thanks. I thought it was bricked." "It would have been if I hadn't taken it apart," the caretaker said. "The water hadn't quite reached the battery connectors and shorted everything, but it would have made its way there soon enough. There's still some condensation behind the camera lens, though. That'll take a while to evaporate." "Thanks," Nick said. He turned the phone over in his hands, unsure what he should say. "I don't take many pictures anyway." "No? Well, that's good." Her voice hardened. "And if I catch you getting the phone out during the day, it'll be confiscated till the end of term. Same goes for that fancy laptop." That was more like it. Nick gave her a short nod, then sank down into the comfort of the chair. The caretaker drifted back to her normal post by the wireless access point, eyes scanning the room for any infringements of school policy. Nick turned on his phone and checked his messages briefly. Then, as casually as possible, he got up and walked out of the room. He could feel the caretaker's eyes burning into his back as he left. "All good?" James asked. "Yeah, my phone's fixed, but if I ever get it out again, the caretaker will confiscate it." Nick closed the bedroom door behind him. "Weird how that works," James said, holding his notebook out, ready to draw a symbol. "You'd think she'd have saved you both the trouble and just kept it." "I don't know how she did it," Nick said, turning the phone over in his hands. "It was totally soaked, and it's not supposed to be waterproof or anything." "A modern miracle," James said. "Come on, put your badge on the windowsill and we'll go. It'll be good when we can put them in something that blocks the signal, then we'll just be able to take them with us." Something the inspector had said popped back into Nick's mind, immediately followed by the kernel of an idea. "Maybe we shouldn't block the badges." "Eh?" James lowered the notebook. "But that makes it too easy for Collier. You want another swimming lesson?" Nick shook his head. "We can block my badge, sure." He walked over to the window and put his badge down and picked up James's. "But imagine if we take yours and leave it somewhere outside Twitchell's. Then imagine that you were Collier. What would you do?" James stared at his badge for a moment. "I would note the location on my phone and go looking for things to steal." "And if Collier's innocent?" Nick said. "He's not," James said. "But if he was?" "Then he wouldn't do anything," James said. "I think you're onto something. We put my badge somewhere and wait to see if Collier turns up. Then we know it was him that stole the book." "Exactly," Nick nodded. "And we don't need to wait. We can take your badge somewhere right now, if you've got a good location that Collier might be interested in." "It's a great idea," James said, nodding. "I think I know just the place to trap him. And it might be time to contact some old friends." This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.